Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest. We have actress, singer, mother, wife, writer, and host and creator of the Nitty Grit, Miss Chantel Denise.
Hey. How you guys doing?
We're doing really good, really good. Blessed and highly favored. Happy Wednesday. Happy Wednesday.
Amen. Happy Wednesday to y'all.
I want to start from the very, very beginning. How was it like growing up in Texas? And which part do you hail from?
Well, I'm originally from, I was born in Houston. And I moved to a little small town called Brookshire, Texas. I'm a country girl. I mean, I grew up in the country, so that in itself is hard work. Growing up in the country, because you're basically cultivating the land yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up where with my grandparents. We grew all of our vegetables in the backyard. We had chickens, we had dogs, we had cats. We didn't eat the dogs and cats, but we ate the chickens. my grandfather used to hunt for squirrel. I had squirrel, I've had alligator, I've had frog. I mean, you name it. Nature was a part of the way we survived with our meals. So I learned a lot from that growing up there. And I remained there all the way through, probably high school. Now I take this back. I went 7th and 8th grade. I moved with my mom for a couple of years just to taste Houston a bit. And so, mm-hmm. you know, when you're a teenager, usually the relationships with mother and daughters, they are challenging during those years. So I had a hard time with just trying to respect my mother's boundaries. So I ended up mm-hmm. going back to my grandparents in Brookshire, and I stayed there till after high school. And then I went back to Houston and remained in Houston for a few years, just really learning how to become independent and to become an adult on my own. And so that's just a little bit of my background before I came here.
Nice. And I was in Houston in December of 2019 visiting my nephew, and it's a beautiful city. I've been all around Texas.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to this one restaurant called the Turkey Leg Hut in Texas, in Houston.
Mm. When was that? What year was that?
This was December 2019.
Okay, so you got to taste it when it's kind of built up, because back in the 90s, it's completely different now from what it looked like in the 90s.
Oh.
Yeah, they built it up quite a bit. I mean, some attractions that were never there before. I mean, it's doing really well, actually. A lot of people are getting jobs there. So it's become like a hub for people, where people are going to grow. Even in the acting world, there are some opportunities there. I see a lot of people moving over there in Houston and Austin, actually. So you got to see it in its finest.
They say it's the new Black Hollywood, Texas and Atlanta, well, especially Houston.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's growing. It's starting to, I think people are starting to look at Houston as, oh, this is kind of a Mecca now. It's shifted. It wasn't always viewed like that. Before, it used to be a competition between Houston and Dallas. People go, whoa, you're from Houston. Oh, I'm from Dallas. And they've been this like rivalry. I'm like, I never understood that, actually. So I never found out why. But Houston is just, you don't hear about Dallas as much anymore. You hear more about Houston and Austin.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find your passion for singing, and how did that first begin?
Well, Aaron, I can remember being in the 2nd grade doing my first solo performance. I remember singing All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. We had like a little Christmas play at school, and I raised my hand to take lead. So I've always been the kind of person that was courageous enough to step out in the front since mm-hmm. a little girl. But I would say I really started pursuing it probably in the 90s, like fully. I had been in, you know, pageants where I had sang, that was my talent in the pageant, or I had been in competitions in Houston, and I even got booed on the stage before. So that actually was good for me because it kept me humble. but I feel like in the 90s is when I really started going, I'm going to make this a professional thing for me. I'm going to make money at it. This is something that I want to pursue all the way. And I think it was about 1998, actually, that I did kind of like my first tour. And just really got a chance to taste some different cities. And keep in mind, I had never been anywhere before I left Houston. So this is the California was the first move I ever made to travel on a plane. I had never been anywhere outside of Texas. So I got a chance to grow up as this country girl and taste the city and go around and move to different places. And I can't tell you, it's been beautiful, just that experience.
That is beautiful, but it was mind blowing, and shocking. The first, you know, go around, just going on an airplane for the first time.
Oh yeah, I remember. I could still see my mom's face where she was crying. I could see her through the window of the airport as I'm on the plane. She's crying because her, you know, I'm leaving. I'm becoming my own person. I got my own identity now, and I'm gonna be doing my own thing. I'm no longer her baby. She was happy for me, but I do believe she hated to see me go. And I never looked back, actually.
And I love your song, The Vision. It has a disco vibe to it.
Yeah.
And I felt myself dancing in the car listening to it.
I'm so glad you got a chance to listen to the song.
It's very motivating and pretty much saying know your self-worth, know who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
And how long did it take you to write the song?
Well, I wrote that song actually during the pandemic, actually. It used to take me a long time to write, but I think now as I'm growing up and learning a lot, it's fairly easy. I basically... my husband and I, we sat down. I think it took us about probably, I would say, 30 days to really cultivate it to the way that I wanted it. And then I would say in about 3 months, we started putting music to it. It took us up to 3 months to get the music laid down with our idea. Because I wrote that song originally for a mentor of mine. She has an organization called Live Your Vision, which I'm a part of. And I said, hey, I like what you're doing. I'm just all about positivity and all about inspiring other women. Would you be open to me writing a song and, you know, you basically using it for your platform and, you know, we can share it for the event. And so that relationship ended up working out really well. I got to perform it on her event. I mean, she's got a group of probably about 200 women that she hosts these events for, and they got to hear the song for the first time. That was last year in June. And it's just kind of been kind of like my anthem, like to remind myself, no, this is what it's about, us pursuing what we want to, us not delaying, but seize the moment right now, because today is the time to live out your vision.
Absolutely. And I was listening to your podcast, The Nitty Grit, December 18th episode with Dr. Antoinette Tracy. And I think her name was Sean LeRae. Yes. And it was excellent talking about mental, spiritual, and emotional health. And it's something that needs to be talked about because we all are going through something. And we all need, you know, to have a conversation, you know, about certain things we go through. It's not easy to let go because we hold a lot of stuff in, but it's really refreshing and a good breath of fresh air once we have a conversation that's very therapeutic to really release that energy, so to speak.
Yes, I agree, Aaron. You know, that conversation was a beautiful one. It's actually become one of my most listened to conversations. And I think because even with what's going on in our world today, people are hurting and they have some spiritual, some emotional pain. Some people have the physical pain of it because they've experienced it. And so I always say you need people like these kind of women who have the expertise in guiding you on how to deal with that stuff. And I thought they mm-hmm. did a fantastic job. And even in my own life, like, I've had to get their kind of assistance, their help, to deal with some of the stuff that I've been through in my life. So you're absolutely right about that. And the conversation needs to continue to go on. That I felt like that was a start for us, but I think that kind of conversation needs to continue to go on.
Definitely. And why do you feel it's important to have integrity, especially as an artist?
Ooh, good question. I like it. You know, integrity is all about the message of who you are. So if you lack integrity, it really communicates a lot about who you are and your values. And so I know for me, I have a strong value system. Like, it's important to me to do unto others as I would want them to do to me. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to go and come in and lie to you about something that I know that I did not do, or, you know, deceive you about something because I think that's what you want to hear. My reputation of being honest and being authentic is very important to me. And so if I live in a space of devaluing that and coming to the table with a compromising that, then my integrity speaks for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's absolutely important in this business, but it starts individually. It really does. I think people have to decide who they're going to be and how they're going to live out their life in this industry. Because at the end of the day, that's all you got. The job will be over. The acting job is going to end at some point. The singing opportunity is going to come in slow. And at the end of the day, all you got is what you're left with, and that's your integrity and who you are.
Right. It's no need to put on the mask and hide who you really are, because you have to be who you really are in order to play someone else. You have to know who you are. It's all about self-discovery as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Rudy, what do you think about the importance of integrity?
Excuse me. Hey, Chanel. I'm sorry, Chantel. You know, I was just listening to you guys, and I was cut off earlier in the show, but I'm back on. And in terms of integrity, I mean, it's everything. It's your footprint, you know, on your path. And it is very important, because it could make you and break you at the same time. And so that's big. And, you know, we as people, I'll say we as Black people, we got to pay close attention to our integrity, you know. You know, I had a friend who was approached to, you know, by someone who wanted to, you know, partner up with him. And, you know, that friend, he did a little research on the guy that wanted to partner with him. And online, his integrity was not there. He had some bad stuff online, people complaining about him and his services. And so, hey, that was like a deciding factor in, as far as that partnership goes, you know. So, yeah, integrity is big in everything that you do. And, your parenting, you know what I'm saying, your family life, your work. Your artistry, you know. And by the way, that was a very cool song. I listened to it, and I was dancing around. It has that.
Thank you. So, I'm glad you got you. You know, it was a woman's anthem, but I'm so fired up to hear that the men are just taking it on. Yes, thank you guys.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I mean, you.
Can you hear me
now? I'm not a father. I had to catch now, myself.
yeah, right. Now, Chantel, now in terms of integrity, have you ever been tested on your integrity? Have you ever been put in a position where you had to compromise, or, you know, has that ever come up in your
career?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So I can give you a couple examples. Like, I mean, this is very interesting because just recently I compromised my integrity on a role that I was offered. And I looked at the role because my approach is always, do I see myself being this character? Do I feel good about it? Can I share this information with my family? Can my kids watch it? Can my family in Texas watch it? Like, I'm always looking at my message and who I am. Someone's always looking in and I influence people. that's just, we all do it. We influence people. Yeah, and so I knew when I took upon that role that it really, before I auditioned for it, and I didn't get the role, by the way. But I knew when I got ready to audition for it, I knew that it did not speak my language, my love language of how I wanted to present myself as an artist. But I said, you know, the agent sent it, let me go ahead and do it. And I did not get that role. They chose someone else. And I believe mm-hmm. with all my heart that because I compromised, God protected me. He carried me where I was weak in the area of making the choice, because I should have turned it down.
Yeah.
Because it did not speak my language. And so that was one example where I feel like I had been put in a situation and I actually did not hold to the footprints of what you said, which I love that word that you use, of who I am.
Well, thanks.
And so that was helpful. And that was just recently. But overall, I am a woman who is always thinking about that and leaning in to live my life that way. And I kept beating myself over the head. I'm like, well, why did you know that what you want and what you don't, why did you just do it? And I think I can't even answer why. I jumped on it because I'm thinking these auditions are coming in. Maybe it's because I hadn't been getting a lot of them lately. I don't know what it was. I'm still in discovery mode over that. But yeah, that's an example of just, and that comes up in the industry all the time.
Yeah. And what motivated you to get into the world of acting, and also do you prefer theater or working in film more?
Oh, I love theater, and I'll tell you why. Being that I am a woman who loves the authentic approach, I almost feel like, not that I'm against it, and I will take a TV and film role if I get an opportunity and it works for me. But the theater, the stage where you authentically have to go in the moment mm-hmm. and use your abilities to tap into the character and live it out in front of people with their eyes pierced right up on you is so motivating and inspiring for me. I love storytelling that way. If you keep me in situations where I have to cut and edit, it's fabricated to me. Not that it doesn't mean that they're not great actors and they can tell the story. I do believe they're still telling the story. But for me, there's something that just kind of a light comes on inside of me. I feel illuminated and propelled to really be vulnerable even more. I just love the work of taking into the space that you're in. Like, am I at a nightclub right now in this scene? Or, you know, what happens if the glass falls on the floor? Do I just leave it there? What, I mean, you know, figuring out all those nuances that happen. And then if you're acting with someone, just the chemistry that takes place live is beautiful. So absolutely, the theater is, that's my domain. I love that.
Mm. The same for me too. I really miss it. I really do. Hopefully in time in the future, it will come back because I enjoy it so much. It's nothing like that raw reaction you get from the audience, and it's no stopping. If mm-hmm. you mess up, you have to continue the show.
Exactly.
And it's
there's
happened
no
to me.
Editing.
Right. I remember I was working on one play and I knew everything. We were rehearsing the play for weeks and we were in the scene, me and this actress who was playing my fiance, and we are starting intermission and we're sitting on a couch and my mind went blank.
Wow.
And the audience was there, it was sold out, full crowd, and I had to play it off. I had to like stare at her and just look at her like I'm in awe of your beauty. And then she kind of helped me get to my line. And I'll never forget what she said, really just get me back focused.
Wow.
It happens to the best of us. And I'm like, that never happened to me. But it happens.
That was your moment. I've definitely had that happen, bro. Definitely had that happen before. A few times.
Yeah. I think we all have.
But it's really cool that you had a great actor alongside you who was actually able to help you, like in that moment. Right. You know, that's a cool thing.
Right. Because it'll be definitely a downer if you had someone that didn't have the experience, that was a novice to the business, and they didn't know exactly, you know, what to say in order to bring you back.
Mm-hmm.
Have to figure it out.
Now, I have a question here. So, theater, you know, it's been around for centuries, thousands of years. What could the theater use now to kind of bolster it back to, you know, the prominence that it had? You know, I know you have film as a medium, you have, you know, your stage, but what could be done to kind of bring theater really back? Not that it's gone, but I'm just saying, is there any type of innovation that we haven't discovered yet? Is there anything, any ideas that you had throughout your experience?
Is that for me or for Aaron? Or both.
For everybody.
Both, yeah. Well, I can answer to some degree. I don't know if, you know, I don't really have all the answers, but I think that theater, what is happening too is, you know, of course, with the pandemic, we can't really do much. But I think that theater has to be almost promoted more. Like, in a sense, for me, I'm a theater lover. So if there's, we should be sharing about it more. Like, oh, there's a piece coming up. There's a play coming up, you know, over here. There's an August Wilson piece happen here. They're going to do two trains here. Like, us starting to talk about it more, put it out in the limelight. Yeah. I think that there's so much publicity over TV and film. You see it even now. This show is coming on Netflix. I mean, everybody's promoting it. Everybody's talking about it. But I don't think there's enough conversation happening about theater. And I think that that's where it starts with people like us putting the word out and saying, hey, you know, I just saw this play the other night. You guys should go check this out. That's how we really keep it alive, word of mouth, because it's not like the doors are closed. I mean, during the pandemic it is, but before there were theater open up and there were stories being told just all over Hollywood, actually. But a lot of people didn't know about it, because it's not promoted.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to take a break. And when we come back, we will have more with Chantel Denise. Hello, Behind the Real viewers. If anyone out there has bad credit and needs their credit score to go up, contact my business partner, Tricia Mann Grant, at 1-818-693-0183.
And we are back with Chantel Denise. I feel that the NBA, wrestling, certain sporting events have made a comeback and they have virtual fans. Why can't they build a theater where they can have some kind of computer system where fans can tune in live and they can see an actual live theater play take place, or we can go back to Shakespearean times and have a play done safely at a park?
I would so agree with what you're saying. I love that park idea to create that element. And I don't know, I'm like, all these theater gurus, why hasn't anybody taken that chance?
Right. Well, it's interesting. You know, in North Hollywood at the Group Repertory Theater, which I personally grew up doing plays out of there, they're recording their shows, and they have an online subscription going on where you could, you know, you pay the subscription and you see so many shows a month. So they have, there are theaters out there making those adjustments.
Okay.
And Yeah. So so you're in Texas, right?
No, I'm in LA now.
Oh, okay.
So right, what's the name of that theater group? North Hollywood, what?
It's the Group Repertory Theater, and it's on Burbank and Vineland, and they've made the adjustment.
Awesome. That's really good to hear. I've been watching a couple of people. There's the Billie Holiday Theater. They did a big event online. Of course, with the technical difficulties, it didn't come across as they wanted it, but it was workable. There are some theater people who are actually having a problem with the way that they are doing it online. They're just feeling like it's not authentic. There's some directors won't even take the job because they feel like it's not really telling the story and coming across how they want it. But I love this idea with the group that you're with. And what they're doing, I'd definitely be interested in seeing some pieces that they put up.
Yes, and they've just opened up a diversity department where, you know, they're, you know, having more plays of color, so to speak. I hate using that line, but, you know, they're just diversifying, you know, their programs to where the public will get what they're looking for. You know what I'm saying?
Nice. Well, I got two plays that they might want, so I'm gonna definitely check them out.
Yes, please.
Great. Have you guys heard of, I'm a member of the Roby Theater. Are you familiar with the Roby Theater?
Yeah, so over in downtown LA with Ben Guillory.
Yeah, with Ben Guillory. So that's where I got my theater training from over there. I started in theater a few years before that, so in the 90s, but where I really learned some things was there. They are really good about educating you on the Black experience in theater, and the plays that they put up are, you know, they're very, very, very good plays. And right now they've been doing some virtual readings that have been really good. They haven't actually put a play up yet online, so I'm sure with the group Repertory Theater, I'm sure they would probably be interested in seeing what they're doing over there.
Oh yeah.
So I'm gonna pass that on.
Yes, please. And you know, this is the time where, you know, we all have to come together to support, you know, our industry of the theater.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they would welcome any newcomers, and they're just open to this new energy, this new creative energy. So it's a very good time.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Nice. And to get a little personal, how did you and your husband first meet?
Oh, my husband and I met at church. We were at the same singles event. And I had seen my husband back and forth. I mean, I wasn't interested. I just looked at him and just, there's the guy over there. He was roommates with one of my best friends who happens to be a guy. Mm-hmm. And so my husband would always come to any event that we would have at our home because my best friend Carlos would always bring him. He was like the sidekick. but I think that moment at that singles event is where we kind of like placed eyes on each other. And I remember him coming up to me saying, "What's a girl like you still doing going to singles events?" And I didn't know whether to take that as an insult or, you know, or something good. So being, you know, the quick-witted person that I am, I said, "That's because a guy like you have not asked me out." And so that just like, he was so, I mean, if we could rewind that and show, he was so nervous. He was just started dropping things and trying to find his pen because he didn't have my number at the time. He says, let me get your phone number. And so I think that was that sweet moment really did something for me because I'm like, he's nervous, like that's kind of cool. And so he won my heart. That year we pursued a friendship, and we would go different places. And I had never met anyone like him, number one, who actually wooed me like that. I remember him having, he was a teacher. He had his students make me paper roses. And so I'm not a flower girl. But he didn't mm-hmm. know that. So you can buy me flowers and roses. I'm like, yeah, that's great. But that's not my love language. So what he did is he had paper flowers made for me, and he put them on my doorstep. And I thought that was the most beautiful thing. I kept them for years because I felt he was intentional, and he really wanted me to know that I was special. And there you have it. We've been together 23 years.
Wow.
Nice. That's beautiful.
Very nice.
I had to ask because you guys take such lovely pictures together. And, you know, every time when I see you guys on Facebook, I just want to gravitate towards you guys. Like, I want to meet him. Aww. I want to actually, you know, when is this going to happen? I mean, we're always, you know, busy. Me and my wife, we have different schedules. But definitely one day when, you know, the times are right, we'll definitely, you know, get together and have a double date. Definitely
that
would love
be great.
That.
I like that too. Because I still have to meet your love. yes.
And me and my wife, we met at a poetry event. She was singing and I was reciting poetry. And, you know, we ended up talking at the end of the night. And we were just talking for at least 2 hours
wow.
straight. And I would go every single month to this event in Sherman Oaks. And we just got closer from there. Then eventually we became boyfriend and girlfriend. And the rest was history.
Wow. And how long have you guys been married?
We've been married for 2 years now, and we've been dating for, let's see here, 8 years.
Nice. And now you got a baby, Olivia. So mm-hmm. cool.
Thank
so
you. Cool. Yes.
What about you, Rudolph?
Oh, me, oh my.
That's a book. That's a song. Me, oh my.
Yeah, so for me, my dear wife, we've been married for close to 18 years.
And, nice.
I've known her for 20. And it's been a journey, to be honest with you. I mean, we have three kids. My eldest is 12. And she's from Japan. So there's this whole journey of getting to know someone and also getting to know their culture.
Mm.
And also getting to know their love language. And, you know, just it's been quite a journey, and it's been a good one. I mean, she was the first lady, never gave me any drama. You know, she very patient. I learned patience from her.
Wow.
You know, and she's not in the industry. So that was a big factor. I think the main thing I want to say about our relationship and why I chose her, for one, there's one reason. I saw the mother of my children. That was for one.
Mm.
Two, she, I could explain it. I've lost my train of thought. Wow. She's just, you know, it has a lot of patience. And so me being, you know, in the movie industry and, you know, going through these ups and downs, and she was just always there for me. And this is what I wanted to say. Yeah, this, you know, I met her at a time where I had lost complete faith in women from LA,
mm.
you know, and it was just like, I wasn't thug enough. I wasn't this, I wasn't that. And she just liked me for me. And that's all I needed.
Wow. That's beautiful.
So, yeah. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Oh. You know, it's very interesting because sometimes we go through life and we have these experiences, and then we have someone that comes along and shows us a different way, a different experience. And it opens our minds and our hearts up to like, oh, wow, this is what I want for myself. This is how I want to live my life. I love how you mentioned she shows you patience. Like that was something that you gravitated to. That's all. It's always beautiful when your significant other can show you things that help you be a better you.
Yes. And you know, me being a young dude, you know, she's put up with some stuff, you know, that I guess every couple goes to at one point or another. And that right there, her dedication, you know, to me and more importantly to our family is the thing that, you know, that bonds us, because I have a strong my integrity as a father, my integrity as a husband is like, I'm in there. I'm going to be there, you know? Mm. And it's kind of like a little, this is kind of a joke between us. It's like, I'm not going to be the one who gives up, you know, it's like we're in a competition to see who stays in it the longest.
So, wow. That's cool. Aaron, yeah. That's something you got to look forward to. That stage of the marriage. Yeah. Yeah, and Rudolph, I'm and with you. I can totally relate.
You know, and as the years, you know, they continue to, you know, to calculate, you know, you realize, wow, this keeps us in there, because in a lot of couples, they don't even last 2 years. They don't. You know? You know, and so that time stowed away with the memories, it just keeps us going. You know. Mm.
That's nice.
So, yeah.
Which is beautiful. And that's really rejuvenating, just to continue to create moments and remember those memories. And I think that really helps grow any relationship, just the moments that you have with each other. And it just creates more love.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still have promises to fulfill, you know, like the promises of taking her around the world, you know, like it hasn't, you know, we've been a few places, but not like how I want, you know what I'm saying? And then there's that whole thing where, you know, someone's been there from the beginning, you know, been there through your ups and downs. And it is one of those things. So being in the industry, this was one of the key factors. You know, I'm in the industry and I have all these industry women around, people that I just don't trust. And I said to myself, you know, I wanted to be able to share my success, you know, with people, with someone I trust and with my family. So I'm so glad that she's not a part of the industry, and, you know, it allows me to have a balance. And so, yeah, that was my experience.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. That's cool.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You have any kids?
And, I have two girls, a 16-year-old and an 11-year-old.
Wow.
Yeah, they keep me busy. They keep me busy.
Now, would you allow them to work in the industry? And
we all have worked to some degree. Like the family goes out on commercials, the whole family. So we've been getting a lot of calls. My daughter and I, we're technically on a veil for two print jobs. My oldest, right now. And
nice.
And so they have pursued it. My little one is more open to continuing. My oldest one really doesn't. So, you know, she does it for me because, you know, I have an agent. So my agent reps them for commercials too. So she said, I'll do the commercial with you, but I don't want to go out for TV and film. I just don't. She says she doesn't like the pressure of learning all the lines and the pressure of being judged, like going in a room in front of these people. So that's something she's not interested in. But I'm actually, you know, I'm glad that she's choosing her own way, because when they were younger, when my 16-year-old was younger, I just put her in and she booked right away. So she's got, they built up a little savings for themselves, because when they were little, they did work. But she, as she's older, she's like, nope, that's not for me.
Right. Yeah. Why I ask is because, you know, sometimes we put our children in, you know, situations where it could be good or it could go completely south.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it could. And I had to learn the hard way on that one, Rudolph, because she was working so much when she was little, I automatically just thought that was the plan for her. And it wasn't until she was 13, she was like, you know, I don't want to do this. This is your dream. And I'm like, whoa, okay, let me step back here, because now it's time for me to just be her mom and not try to be her mom coach. And what do you call those stage moms driving their kids all around, forcing them to make do this thing that they want for them. And that was really good for me to just learn to see she's got to make her own decisions in life. She's growing up, and if she doesn't want to do it, she shouldn't do it. And I step back and I say, yeah, I respect what you want to do. And, you know, I know there's something else for you that God has planned for you. So I won't force this up on you, because I was trying to remind her, well, do you realize you've made money? you've done well at it. You have the ability. You've been chosen. I said, you got more work than I did. She's like, nope, but it's not for me. And so I said, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's been playing on my mind. Even though my daughter is 6 months, everyone's telling me that, oh yeah, she's gonna be an actress. She's gonna be in the movie business like you. She's gonna do this and do that. And I've been asking myself, do I really want her to be a part of that? As far as me just, you know, throwing her in, or should I wait until she gets older, until she makes that decision for herself?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I would like to speak in on that. That, you know, the things people say is not the blueprint. It's what you and your wife decide for your family. Like, if it's something that you want to consider for her, a lot of times, I mean, if you look at Sanaa Lathan, her dad was in the business. And it's obviously she gravitated to that and who she is today. You see her working, and she's very talented. So some of our kids are going to just grow up, and that's just where they're going to go. That's what they're going to want to do. And I think that instead of trying to guard them from it, and this is just from me as a mom learning from my own mistakes of trying to guard my kid from experiencing something to the point that my kid I'm referring to like educating her about the streets and all that, trying to protect her. Well, you can't go here and you can't do this and you can't do that. And so she learned, she made some choices in her life that were not helpful for her, because I guarded her, protected her, and she didn't have the skills to deal with it. And so what I would say is, when it comes to the industry, try to have a paradigm shift on it, not so much as I got to protect her from the industry, but I got to train her for it in case she choose to go into it.
Okay. Very, very powerful.
Does that make sense?
Where's the wisdom?
Yeah.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, I've learned the hard way. I've spent so much time trying to protect my kids from the world. And the things that I was trying to protect her from, she actually stepped into. And then I had to go clean up and help and really turn her around. I mean, that's her journey. And that's her story. And she's doing well now. But it took my mistakes. It took me experiencing and I'm just giving you guys wisdom that I learned over the years from other parents of, I should tell you, protected your child. And she had no skills because you didn't train her for the world. You just try to protect her and cover her from it. Y'all don't get silent on me.
That's powerful. It's very powerful. And it's something that I'm definitely going to keep with me. You know, I appreciate you for sharing that with us.
Amen.
Going back to your career, what are some things that you look forward to doing within the next 5 years once things open back up, or just in general?
So I'm very excited about that question, because right now I've been in a group called Live Your Vision, where I've been kind of crafting and really getting down to the nitty gritty of my primary thing that God has called me to do. And right now, what I look for in the next 5 years is to really have, I enjoy inspiring people. I don't know if you've seen any of my posts, but my whole my whole thing is like, how can I speak into the world? How can I put some positivity in the world? How can I share my experience and help other people? So I'm, my plan is to have my inspirational, a channel where I'm actually helping the community, where I'm actually coaching, because that's one of my dreams, to actually coach people to take their pain and make it into a purpose. I've overcome a lot in my life. And so I feel like it's not supposed to go wasted, and it's supposed to go beyond me. So I see myself helping people in that way. And it just next 5 years and beyond, I feel like this is kind of going to kind of be my, the way I live the rest of my days, and helping people in that way. And also having the artist, and I want to start in the arts area of inspiration. And I, like my stories that I've written, my short film that I have, it's about how I've pretty much had to deal with pain and what I did to overcome it. So, yeah, I just think that the things that we have, our experiences in life, they should never go wasted. And so I want to do that. I want to be helping women all over the world.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful, because we all need that extra push, because we all have pains that we endure, and we grow from them. Yeah. And we definitely need to really go back to that pain sometimes and reminisce on how we could find the purpose in that pain to really motivate and help others, because it's our testimony.
Yeah.
And experience is the best teacher, as the old saying says. And I definitely know what it's like to be a counselor. I was a drug counselor for 2 years, and I was a teacher's assistant slash kind of a counselor. I wasn't given the title as counselor, but I had a lot of kids that were in the juvenile system come up to me, and I would talk to them one-on-one and really guide them in the right direction. And it's very, very rewarding to see them come after, you know, come back, you know, a year later or however you might see them in life saying, oh, thank you. You know, you helped me out with my resume. You helped me out with these words of wisdom where now I'm in a different direction, a better direction in my life.
I like that. So, you serve the community. Yeah, and I think that we as people, that's how we make change in the world, to be honest, to me. Because some of this stuff is not, we're not going to have the control over it. We're not going to be able to, you know, politics are going to always be around. You know, the stuff with injustices, it's going to be around. It's going to happen. There are things we're not going to be able to change, but the change that we can make starts with individually deciding, am I going to put some light into this world, or am I going to complain about what's dark?
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
And, you know, having purpose, right? Purpose is so big, you know. Sometimes I tell my children, you know, your job is your purpose. And you serve your purpose, you always have a job.
Oh, I like that.
You know, and it's so real. And we're at the, you know, in these times where it's of no benefit to think of myself, me. We're coming around to a point where it's in the benefit of humanity to serve humanity on the level to where it would allow you know, healing, because a lot of things are going on, and you know, people are, there's so much confusion, there's so much deception, you know, a lot of things based on money, and you know, that feeling of giving back and impacting someone's life is man, it's immeasurable, and the rewards we get from it are just, you can't even count them.
Wow.
So that shift, yeah, the shift that you're talking about, that is awesome. And I like the way you laid it out, you know, because there comes a point in our life where you're like, you know, wow, how can I explain this? How I want to go out?
I hear you on that. I think you're doing just fine, because I hear it.
Because It's like, what? So what is retirement? Mm. I mean, is there such thing? Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know? That's true. I mean, Willie Nelson, I remember him saying in an interview years ago, they'd always kind of kept, you know, with me, stayed with me. He said in an interview, this one reporter had asked him, when are you going to retire? Whenever are you going to retire? And he said, I'll retire when I die.
Oh, wow. That's Willie Nelson?
So that's Willie Nelson. So I'm like, wow. I mean, that's very powerful. And that's always something that kind of stayed with me because even though we're in the industry and we are constantly, you know, working, we have other accolades that we have and that we're, you know, pursuing as well. When does it end? And a lot of people that I've seen, friends and family that do retire, they often are pondering, what do I do now? What do I do next? How do I stay in shape? Do I pick up a new hobby? And some of them end up, you know, going, you know, to dark places because they're lonely. Mm. Some do find themselves, you know, picking up certain new trades, and some just kind of unfortunately just wither away because they have nothing to do. And I think the more busier you are, or just being busy in general, you'll never retire, because I don't think life is about that. It's about really just sharing your testimonies, your destiny, and your purpose with other people.
Wow. Good point. Yeah. Good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And going back to the industry, what are some things you have learned over the years being in the entertainment business, as far as also the struggles and the ups and downs you faced over the years?
I would say the things that I've learned, I think the industry has taught me to really hone in on living authentic. In particular, mm-hmm. when I was at the Robie Theater, one of the things was being able to be vulnerable and let go. I think I was having a problem with that, you know, just from life experience. And then, you know, not wanting to have your peers in the room with their eyes on you, and you know, I always feared judgment. Like I that was a big thing for me. And it wasn't until I really started allowing myself to be vulnerable that I started actually experiencing the kind of work that I would want to see on stage. So I think that that was a learning point for me, is to really be embarrassed. You know, Ben Guillory doesn't play around. He asks you questions. He doesn't tell you what you're not doing, but he asks you questions that lead you to identify what you're not doing or what could be better. And so I just love that approach. He never was a director who's like, I'm going to tell you how to act the scene out. Because, you know, if he has to tell you why are you there learning, he could just go and do it himself. But if he can teach you how to discover, then that's the method. And I appreciated that, because he broke a lot of my myths that I had, my off thinking of fearing judgment, my fears. Those were great learning tools for me in the industry, just really learning how to overcome fear and taking on, allow myself to experience the practice and the method of how to go through to get there. Does that make sense?
Makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. And what was the other part of your question? That was one of my struggles, but I learned something new out of it.
I think that pretty much kind of answered it. This what you've learned over the years of being in the business, and that's really cool to really know about self-discovery and to be vulnerable when it comes to playing a role, because we have to in order to become clay. And that way the director can mold us to exactly where he or she wants us to be. And as we both know, Prentice's Gardner, phenomenal director. Good old Prentice's, mm-hmm. because she will look at us and she would tell us to pause and do it again, which is our favorite, you know, saying. And you know, something that I've really, you know, learned from her. Just, you know, constantly have to, you know, do it again, you know, say, so to say the least. But did you meet Parenthesis through the Roby Theater?
No, I went to the Roby before Parenthesis. I met, oh my gosh, I'm trying to remember where I met Parenthesis, but we go actually way back when I was back to 2012, I think, or 2011. I think I first met her. I actually met her before I started going to the Roby, and we just, I can't remember where I met Parenthesis, but we kind of stayed in connection and contact with each other. Cause I felt like she was kind of a positive chick. So we kind of like just stayed in each other's circle. And then one day, I had asked her to work on something with me, and we had meetings about that particular project. And then it came around when she started putting her plays out here in LA. And that's when she asked me to be on the one that you were on. That's how I met you.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first time I had ever actually worked with her as far as for working on one of her projects. But we knew each other like on a business level before that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that's a play that I really miss, written by phenomenal writer Sharon Judy, Misleading Lady. I mean, man, it's going to continue. I know that for sure.
Oh, yeah, I definitely see that. I told her, I said, this is a movie, just so you know. But she was like, I've already been told that. So I'm thinking that's going to end up going that route at some point.
Definitely. And, for my final question, what would you tell someone that was on the verge of their big break, but they were thinking about giving up?
Oh, the first thing I would tell a person who's on the verge of a big break is the number one thing that I think that every actor and every human being should experience is called humility.
Mm.
Stay humble. Mm. But if they were feeling, thinking about giving up on the verge of a big break, I would just try to get them to look through life through a different lens. Like, you have an opportunity here. We can never waste opportunities. Now, we need to think them through sometimes, but opportunities must never be wasted. And if they have an opportunity and they've been given a chance, a big break, they actually have to step into that big break, because only will they actually see their life flourish when they step into that big break. If they choose to give up on it, they will never experience growth. They will never experience change. And some of that step may be healing for them too. They won't get to experience exactly what God has in mind for them to experience. You always have to trust that if you're in a position and you're given an opportunity, that you have to actually take advantage of it. I mean, there are so many people who are wanting to be in this industry who want to have an opportunity. And for someone who has one, they would have to, it's almost like check your gratitude meter. You have an opportunity here. You gotta probably process why you're not willing, because there's some kind of block there. But you always have to step into opportunity, because growth comes from opportunity. Exchange comes from all of that. And you actually go on to help someone else. It's not just for you.
I love that.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on that, Rudy?
Never give up. And that's one. And what I would say, I agree with, you know, stay humble. I could relate a story where I thought I had made it at one point. Man, I went out, man, like it was the year 2090. Like, I was partying, I was playboying, doing all types of stuff, man. And guess what? That contract got nixed. You know, so where I thought I had the victory, and, you know, and I just kind of just dropped everything I stood for, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm a spiritual person. I just started being Mr. Party Dude and not giving up.
And, you know, the contract got pulled. So, yeah, stay humble always and never give up. And know that the road may be long, you know. Trust God that, you know, it may not happen when you want it to happen. But if you stick with it, it will happen when it's supposed to, you know. And that's all I'll say.
Absolutely correct. And Chantel, I just want to say thank you for being a guest on our podcast.
You're welcome. Really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you. And definitely we're going to bring you back. Just want to say we love you and we are going to talk to you real soon.
Love you guys.
Love
you,
Chantel.
Thank you, brothers.
All right.
You too. Have a good
You're
one.
Welcome. You take care, sister.
Have a good one. So everyone, I want to say continue to love with all your heart, put God first, and never give up. This has been Aaron King with my co-host, Rudy McCollum, and this has been Behind the Reel.
Behind the Reel.